Let's read a passage for today, Isaiah chapter 60. And it's a well-known passage. If you remember like a couple of passages in Isaiah, this is probably one of them. But Isaiah chapter 60 from verse 1 to 6 says, "Arise and shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord rises upon you." See how darkness covers the earth, and thick darkness is over the peoples. But the Lord rises among you, and His glory appears over you. Nations will come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Lift up your eyes and look around you. All assemble and come to you. Your sons come from afar. Your daughters are carried on the hip. Then you will look and be radiant. Your heart will throb and swell with joy. The wealth of the seas will be brought to you. To you the riches of nations will come. Herds of camels will cover your land, and young camels of Midian and Ephah, and all from Sheba will come, bearing gold and incense, and proclaiming the praise of the Lord." So you might have thought that I wasn't going to share on Epiphany this year, and you would be wrong. It's kind of one of my favorite dates in the Christian year, and I'll tell you about that in a moment. But it really is, I think, it's often celebrated on, or mostly it's the Sunday after New Year. The day of Epiphany actually varies. The actual sort of feast of Epiphany is yesterday. There's all kinds of traditions around the world. There's one particular one I was remembering as we were praying this morning. It's in actual fact quite a new one. And I think where it's the Episcopal and Anglican churches around the world take all their Christmas trees, they gather their Christmas trees, and they have a huge bonfire. And I was saying earlier, it wouldn't help with us. Ours is a plastic one, and it doesn't actually come out all that often anymore as the kids have grown up and that. But the whole, the symbol of it is that Jesus is the light of the world. And it's a call and it's a prayer for His light, like Isaiah 60, to shine into the dark places of the world and into the places in our lives where we need His light. So it's quite a cool sort of theme for the beginning of the year. So you know that often at like these high points, I mean, we don't follow the lectionary the whole year, as you know. Belinda was referring to that in her message. But I like to focus on the texts for the, like these, you know, important dates, whether it's Christmas or Easter or Pentecost or things like that. This one is not as well known. I think in some circles it is. More and more, Pentecostal evangelical churches who didn't used to focus on the kind of global readings and theme are doing so more and more, and I'm not sure about Epiphany. But of all the seasons, this one just comes at the right time. So Christmas, we know, was not around the time of Jesus' birth. It was probably months earlier. And then as the church really just began to take over and became popular, and around the time of Constantine, lots of things happened in terms of governments and authorities, and there was a huge shift around that time. So what the Christians did is they just took over the winter celebrations, particularly some of the pagan winter solstice celebrations, and this became this time to celebrate the birth of Christ. And it's cool. I think it doesn't matter when we celebrate His birth, but that's the time that we use. But our calendar, not the Jewish calendar, not the Christian calendar of the year, the calendar that we follow starts on 1st of January, and then you count down how many days, holiday, when does, you know, I'm asked, when does school start, but when do people at school go back, and when does work start, and you know, all that kind of thing. But I mean, the 1st of Jan is the beginning of the new year for us. And so the first Sunday that we celebrate in the new year is all about Jesus. It's about the light of Jesus being shared in the world. It's about Christ being made known to the whole world. So Epiphany is, it's exactly that. It's an epiphany. But it also means a revealing, an unveiling, a making known. And so the famous passage that is always shared is that of the Magi bringing gifts and coming to the, you know, this little new family and the infant Jesus and bringing gold, which is a symbol of divinity, and bringing frankincense, which, you know, it's various things, but I mean, people link it with worship. That this king that we give gold to, these precious, precious, expensive gifts, this is not like socks and undies for Christmas, okay? This is like you bringing the best of the best. And this frankincense as well is, this king is to be worshipped. And myrrh is for embalming. And there's all kinds of traditions around it, but right there, as we look back through history, we see that this child was to be the king of Israel in the world. That we are to come like the Magi and bow down. I love the text that says they bowed down and gave him these gifts, which is the frankincense, is that we bow to him in worship. And he would give his life as a sacrifice for the world. So often, it's quite sort of customary at this time to focus on those gifts and that. But I don't want to do that this morning. I want to just look at this overall sense of what was happening. And the first thing is that it was, as I said, this revealing. It's an epiphany. It's God the Father, Yahweh, making known to the world, revealing to the world that his Messiah, his servant, his king had come. And that's the symbolism about light as well. And it's the worship we'll kind of end with, the two songs that Dylan, the last two songs, Dylan, I was just thinking, like, we're singing Where I Want to End is just in surrender. And we're singing what Epiphany is all about. It's about Jesus being the center. Jesus being all about, he is the one who guides us. He is the one who reveals himself to us. He is our guide. He is our compass. He is our light for the world, for the year that we head into. But the amazing thing is that the people who came to worship were not the Jewish people. They weren't the religious leaders. They weren't the political leaders. They weren't, you know, all the people that should have come. These men from the East came. And we call them, we call them astrologers. I mean, in those days, you didn't have these, defined kind of categories in universities and things like that. They were wise, learned philosophers, astronomers, the whole mix of just what was going on in that world. But these were the wise and learned men that came from the East. They didn't come from Bethlehem or Jerusalem, or they weren't like the shepherds that were on the sides of the hills. And for Matthew's gospel to celebrate that is also quite profound, because Matthew's gospel is our most Jewish gospel. And Matthew's going, it's like right at the outset, it wasn't God's people who recognized him. And there's this powerful message in that Jesus didn't come just to God's chosen people. He came for the whole world. And the revelation of God's gift to the world was for the whole world. Right from the outset. Right from the beginning. And I think that for us is just a stark reminder at this time. You know, I don't know about you, but like we have our favorites. We like people who look like us. We like people who think like us. You know, we connect with people who talk the same language and, you know, get on with us. And sometimes we're just comfortable there. And yet Epiphany is about, this is about the whole world. And I think it's quite amazing. I mean, a silly little thing. I was walking, so we stay with these friends, Grant and Liz. Grant has preached us, some of you know them quite well. And we stay with them in Nottingham, and then I always walk in the morning, and then I meet Amy. She's about 20 minutes down the road. We meet somewhere in the middle, and there's this one house that has always has a flag up. And they're kind of, I don't know, the new buzz hip flag at the moment in the UK is a flag with half of the UK and half of the Ukraine. You know, just showing like their solidarity in that. And I mean, I don't know, I find stuff like that interesting. I'm going, but it's like in my lifetime, you know, I'm not that old. But in my lifetime, it's like, Yerkes didn't like them. You know, these were the, you know, in the Cold War, they were part of the enemy. You know, they were part of like, you know, someone from the Ukraine came, you know how long they would have spent at immigration. And all these, you know, these funny things. And I just realize again that we, like the global politics and borders, and they're always changing. There's always conflict. There's stuff that's going on. And I mean, to think at this time, here were these Arabs in Israel, the first people that came to worship Jesus were from Iran, Iraq, or further east. They didn't look like me. Some of the Christians talk about the 1040 window, the least evangelized areas in the world. The areas of the world that are most closed to the gospel or to Christianity. Maybe we can differentiate that. Here are these people coming and worshiping Jesus. They are the first to worship and bow down and proclaim that in actual fact he is God's Messiah and King and Lord. And I think that should give us such like pause on the one hand and challenge us. God's King, his Messiah, Jesus, is meant for the whole world. And so to put it quite simply, today is a reminder at the outset of the year that the purposes of God are about worship and mission. I just love those two things. It's literally about God's plan is for the planet. And where we are comfortable with where we sit and who we with, it's a challenge to remind us that it's for everyone. And the first people that followed him were mostly outsiders. It's like you had these shepherds and you had these guys from the east, and then you had the poor, and then you had, I mean, in that, the society of that day, all these women and all these beggars and all these lepers and all these, like, the complete outcasts. He was so attractive to them. So again, that becomes a challenge for us. So two things just to reflect on personally. God's mission, his great commission, and his commission to us is that he wants his light, his life, his Messiah to be revealed to the whole world. And so it's easy to pray for the far-flung areas on the globe, but the real challenge is, what about your world? What about your circles of influence and people? What about where your world begins and ends, where you work, where you go to school, who you hang out with, who you live with? Maybe people in your house, or people on the other side of the fence, or people that you Zoom with, or I don't know, the people that we connect with. Every one of us engages with the world somehow. Even in the midst of the worst part of the pandemic, we were on WhatsApp calls and Zoom meetings. We're all engaging with God's world. And so the challenge for us is, where does his light need to shine? Where does Jesus need to be unveiled, made known as the King, as the one to bow down and worship, as the one who gave his life for the world? I was thinking with that simple act of the Magi coming and kneeling, I was like, Jesus' life and the end of the story begin and end in the same way. It's like the first people who came and they knelt down and they worshipped. And the end of the story says, every knee will bow and every tongue confess that he is Lord. It begins and ends with kneeling and recognizing who he is. And so that is like the second challenge I just wanted to put with you. The one is like, where in your world? And the second one is about our worship. So Epiphany is like the light being turned on. And even for us, as we come and we sing, we surrender, and Jesus be the center. There's that same challenge of, where does he need to make himself known? Where does he need to be revealed anew or afresh in my life? Another way to put it, you know, to use the metaphor of the light and shining, is, where does he need to shine in my life? And so this challenge of Epiphany is, it's a challenge for the whole world. It's a challenge for our world, but it's an uncomfortable challenge for me. You can't just say, well, I don't know, let me sort of give some money to a missions organization in Iraq because that's where the wise men came from. It's like, no. We need to say, where do I still need to bow? Where does your light still need to shine in my life? And that, for me, is the bigger challenge at times, eh? So John the Baptist said this, and it could be like a prayer for us. John said, I must decrease that he may increase. It's kind of like John was this like famous preacher, you know. It's like hellfire and brimstone and like, you know, locusts and wild honey and, you know, all these sackcloth and ashes, or it's not exactly the right word, but you know what I mean. But like this clothing that he wore and everything like that. And he said, like, I've been the focus of attention, which is like us. We actually prefer to be the focus of attention. You know, we prefer when everything is about me, I'm far happier. And John reminds us, like, whoa, okay, let's take the focus off you and put it on him. And so as we end now and we pray, the really dangerous prayer is, Lord, where do I still need to bow? Where does your light need to shine? And another just simple one is like this year, like starting with today, give me another epiphany. Surprise me with who you are. And that would be a great one. Like this year, Lord, why don't you just surprise us, shock us with who you are? And it starts with just that simple picture of the Magi kneeling down. Or that song that I love. Jesus, you be the center.